Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Iggy Perullo. Iggy cultivates leaders who are building the habit of emotionally intelligent leadership so they can shift culture and make the world a better place. She facilitates masterminds for professionals who want to lead with wisdom as they excel in their work, sport, and life. She created WSL Leadership to embolden leaders who value connection, communication, and trust. Iggy works with individuals and teams around the world to overcome challenges and function like champions. Welcome to the podcast, Iggy.
Hi, thanks. It's great to be here.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
I think it's almost a literal answer for me. I work and still work a bit for the Outward Bound schools in the US. So I work for the Voyager Outward Bound School in Minnesota. And for people not familiar, that's education, but on a wilderness-based expedition. So the main focuses are character development, leadership, and service. So I, over the course of, decades, led a lot of expeditions, right? So I'm out there in the field leading trips with folks, primarily for me, canoeing expeditions, weeks long. So we pack up, we paddle out for weeks and weeks, which is great in some ways because you can really get into things that are you're not constrained to a timeline. I've also worked in a traditional school environments where it's like the bell rings in 42 minutes and so you're done and like the next crew comes in, right? So it's nice to have to see people over time, to see development, and especially development around things like leadership, which are you have to practice and try and do. So anyway, I was doing this work and in working in the summer seasons, and then I added working in the winter season, so dog sled and ski expeditions. And I got to this point where I was so frequently turning over students, like for me frequently was like within a week. So students for a week, then they're gone. Students for a week and then they're gone. And some winter courses, because lots of folks have more time constraints in the winter, that I just got, burnout is sort of this phrase we use and we say, I was so worn out and tired and felt like I could barely drag myself out of bed, like kind of physically ailing. And had to step away from that for a little bit, had to change the work I was doing, had to step back from being in the field so much, even though I loved the work and the students and being there and doing this type of work. And took on a little bit of a different role and moved more into training staff or leading, coaching and leadership for staff as opposed to directly with students, which turned out for me to be a really healthy choice at that time. So I was, I feel like I got to this point of just being fatigued, like deep, deep fatigue and struggling with that. And for me, took a break away from it for a little while, got some actually warmer weather for a hot second, and then could come back into a role that, you know, maybe just suited my evolution at that time a little better. And I still did some work with students in the field, but the quantity definitely shift toward supporting staff more.
Yeah, and I could see that. My two older kids went to an expeditionary gardening elementary school, so they did a lot of voyages, right? And they had those people who were leading, and there would be 4 or 5 day camping trips, hiking up 13,000 feet mountains in Colorado. So I can imagine that kind of role, especially if you're doing group after group, you do get worn out after a time. So
That I wanted to do longer and longer courses. Like I didn't want to do week-long courses, I wanted 3 week and 3 month, and you know, so it was for sure.
So how did working with students in the Outward Bound schools help you learn how to work with leaders and cultivate new leaders?
Oh, it was great. That being one of the missions of Outward Bound, like that was a topic, right? And I think I got a lot of practice at some of those lessons that we encounter frequently, really around communication or decision-making or how a leader needs to facilitate their group to get things done. So some of those sort of parts and pieces like skills lessons, I have those dialed. We can talk responsibility, we can talk freedom, we can talk decision-making all day, right? But the reality of that also was that each person who came to the school or came to the different course is unique and different, and how they, what's authentic for them is not going to be what's authentic for someone else. And in leadership, authenticity is so important. Like, it's great to have skills and techniques and tools and all that information, but unless you can present that and present yourself in a way that's authentic and grounded in your values and like cultivates mission alignment or goal, you know, alignment with your team, it's going to fall flat and it's not going to work. So the beauty, I think, of that whole aspect of my, I don't know, professional and self-education was working with people and helping them cultivate authentic leadership for themselves in an environment where it's tangible and noticeable. Like either we get from here to there or we literally don't get from here to there. We're somewhere else at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's so important because I think whether you're leading a school or you're a teacher in a classroom or working with a group on a voyage or a expedition, right? If you're a leader of a group, if you're not authentic, people can see right through that. Right?
Oh yeah, it fails. And like there are these weird stereotypes of leadership that people try to squish themselves into that no one actually likes and aren't authentic and fail, whether you're teaching or leading a group or anything. Like if you try to be like, you know, I'm gonna be really tough, and you're not, that's not you to be really tough. And there's ways to be tough and supportive. And there's ways, you know, that's not that being really tough is a bad thing. But if you're a person who is really focused on collaboration and building relationship, and you're like, well, I'm going to be the dictator of this team, this class, you know, whatever. Not only does it, people don't like it, but it comes off as inauthentic for you. And there's times you need to be directive. There's times obviously to take on different types of roles. But if you're not going to be true to yourself and build connection and build relationship in a way that's authentic to you, people think you're fake. And then no one really wants to hang out with you or follow you or pay attention to you or trust you.
Yeah. It can fall flat. Yeah. Absolutely. And sometimes when this type of leader, you know, who's trying to be somebody they aren't, and the team falls flat, what happens if the team goes off the rails, whether it's a group of kids in an expedition or a group of employees at a school?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that happens, right? That happens pretty often where things, just get out of hand or they just get weird sometimes. And it looks different in different places. Sometimes there's an all-out mutiny, right? Where people are like, we're done with this. Or there's, you know, votes. People get removed from leadership roles or in different ways, you know, voted or this or that. You know, there's just different processes in different places. But sometimes a team just doesn't work well. And so this like low-lying sort of dysfunction that happens all the time. And I think people sort of tolerate and accept that sometimes, but it's really not productive. Like, it's not like you're off the rails, like you've taken a dramatic detour, but things are just sort of limping along, you know, in a way that's not productive or effective. And in all those situations, I think it's helpful often. I think some of the situations happen because of unspoken expectations as one kind of genre of why that happens. And people are like, oh yeah, we all know where we're going. We all know what we're doing. In reality, people don't all know where you're going and don't all know what you're doing. So sometimes dialing back, one way to look at it is to dial back to, wait, where are we all going? What are we all doing? Yeah. What do we expect of each other? And what are we not saying about what we expect? Like, oh, I expect everyone to be here and do this and do that. And the other folks are like, well, I expect to be here and do this and, you know, something else. So clarifying expectations and opening lines of communication are really important in those moments, because you may think, everyone might actually think they're all on track. And they're like, oh yeah, we're actually doing this thing. We're doing great. And you're like, wait, I thought we were doing this other thing. So it could be even a perspective whether you're off the rails. Sometimes things are just out of hand, but still opening those lines of communication really helps clarify where we're going, what we're doing, and what we expect of each other in those different roles and in those spaces.
And sometimes like, you mentioned, like, if the lines of communication aren't open, there's going to be a communication breakdown. And then the leader is not seen as very productive. So what happens when there is that communication breakdown? And is it possible for the leader to then, you know, regain some of their trust, basically? Because I think a lot of trust is lost from the group when they, you know, feel like they can't, you know, the leader says one thing and then something else happens.
Absolutely. Trust. Yeah. Trust is so huge. You really nailed that there. Like, trust is the problem often. And so you're not just solving a communication problem. You're actually solving a trust problem. And communication is one way to solve that, or one way to work on that, or one way to sort of build that. And some of those trust issues happen for different reasons. Like, you know, people can be like, I guess maybe not intentionally, but maybe unintentionally disrespectful. They can just do things that are hypocritical, you know, or inconsistent. And so people don't trust them, or they can act in ways that seem to have no integrity or don't align with like the group mission or group expectations. So I think those moments when you're actually trying to rebuild trust to reconnect with your team and reconnect with all the people around you, it really takes, like, this is where relying on authenticity can do well, or being inauthentic. People are like, oh, I didn't trust you, and now I don't even know who you are. Like, we're done with you. So without being inauthentic in those moments, I think there's this idea of being accountable for your actions, being accountable for what you did, what you said, what happened, whatever it is. And sometimes things are messy and amorphous, but you still had a part of it as a leader. You're still responsible for creating that culture or creating that environment in different ways. And that is your responsibility. I think the leaders we trust the least are the ones that are like, well, something happened. I don't know why or how and blah, blah. You know, like they mistakes were made is sort of this classic line. Mistakes were made. I'm like, well, yeah. And what about you? Like, you're supposed to be the one keeping us on track, moving us along, you know, whatever it is in your leadership role. So being accountable for your actions, for your behavior. Does a lot to build that rebuild trust or rebuild a sense of connection or a sense of authenticity within that person. If a leader, you know, things are a huge mess and leader's like, well, mistakes were made. You're like, oh, I don't know why I'm even talking to you anymore. You're just not a part of it. But if a leader shows up and says, you know, here's some mistakes I made. Here's some things I'm confused about. Here's some things I think we should all do. What about you? And like engages with people and reopens that communication. I think there's a lot of potential for rebuilding trust, and then your team can get to, you know, be back on track, get going, heading the right direction together. It takes work, it takes time, and it's not always easy to do, I think, for folks for many different reasons.
Yeah, and I think that's how you grow as a leader, because everybody makes mistakes, right? And if they're able to work through those mistakes, fess up to being a part of the mistake, not trying to put it on somebody else, right? And be a part of the solution. That's how leaders grow. So
absolutely.
And I think this leads into my next question. It could be from a leadership perspective, or it could be from an employee perspective. If they, you know, have somebody on their team who's super annoying, maybe somebody who's, you know, that type of problem personality and, you know, does not like follow through with suggestions, or, you know, basically is not on board with what the team's doing.
This is, we all have this person, right? Or these people, or these personalities maybe around us that where we want, they just don't quite fit in sometimes. Or I think you, like some of those behaviors are like, I expect you to do this and you just didn't do the thing. Or there's just behaviors that aren't really productive or supporting the team. I think there's a sort of this classic of like the person who takes on the role of being the devil's advocate, but really they're just a pain in the butt the whole time. They're like, well, I just want to bring up every problem you could ever imagine. I'm like, we don't need every problem we could ever imagine right now. We need solutions and to move forward, right? And so in situations that can be really tough to deal with when you want to do things or move forward. So I think it, again, comes down to a little bit building connection with this person and trying to understand what they think their role is. Everyone, if we look at everyone's actions as just their behavior, and then their behavior is all trying to meet different needs. I'm a fan of William Glasser's basic needs theory, where we have only a few basic needs we're trying to meet all the time. So someone's behavior, and it's hard to read, you know, one person's behavior, like, oh, they're doing that because they really value connection. And someone else is like, well, I think they're really doing that because they value freedom, or, you know, something else. And we don't, we can't diagnose other people's behavior and needs until we connect and talk with them. So trying to help those folks that are exhibiting behavior you don't want on your team and understand what their needs are they're trying to meet, then it's a little bit easier to be like, cool, this behavior is actually not meeting your need well, because you maybe want connection, but you're really just irritating people all the time by like always wanting to get in their face and always wanting to ask, you know, like being too much of a question asker or a problem bringer or whatever it is. And here's some other ways we can meet your need that would also meet the team's needs. So then your job as a leader is to find out how to meet individual needs plus team goals, team needs at the same time. Other times you might be just need to have a frank conversation with this person around what's acceptable for their behavior or their role or expectations. And I know leaders shy away from that, feels like conflict to people, like, oh, I want something and they are doing something else. Cool. That feels like conflict. As a leader, if you avoid conflict, you're not going to be a leader for long. Like it's just not going to work out, because there will be these pieces of conflict or disagreements or disputes that happen. And that is one around what behavior we want, we need, we expect. Like we need to expect people to work toward team goals together. Great. This behavior is not doing that. You as a person are great. So I'm not talking about you as a person. I'm talking about your behavior. Change this behavior and we're going to be good to go. Don't change this behavior. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I mean, I'm for like, where we put you in the role that where you can thrive, or is this team the right team for you? You know, is like another question, depending on the situation you're in. Sometimes you do need to fire people that, or move them to a different space or give them a different opportunity, whatever it is. In reality, not everyone is a great fit for every team.
What if it gets to the point where
this podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network, better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
or a person like that is making a whole team become toxic, and they're bringing down the whole team, and or it filters maybe into the school, and it's you know, it could be in a building where it's been, you have these negative people, and they bring just toxicity. So what happens when there's like just a toxic culture in a team or in the majority of a school staff? Maybe a new leader is coming in. How would they work to maybe correct that and rebuild the team?
Yeah, that's a tough one, right? And that's often where you get a new leader, because all of that toxicity built up because previous leaders didn't do their job and that piece of their job, right? They may have been doing other pieces or had other things. Yeah. But culture is, I think, a reflection of leadership, and culture is the job of leadership broadly to direct and sculpt. And again, I would just look down to the behaviors. Like, what are the behaviors that are actually problematic? And I think there's this, my experience in the sort of more traditional school environment, there was this very funny conversation around how teachers make terrible students in a different way, or like at a session or maybe not a conference, at a training or different things. I'm like, huh, do they? I'm like, maybe sometimes. But the idea of like that you're still a person, right? Like you have a role, or maybe a classroom role or a team role, but you also have a department role, or you might also have a community role, you know, just sort of different pieces of different roles you take on at different times. And the job of leadership is to cultivate a culture that thrives in your team. I think if your culture isn't thriving, you have work to do. And very few of our cultures are self-sustaining, these amazing, thriving things. So culture, I think, is always the work of a leader in any environment, in a classroom environment or a staff environment or a leadership environment or an organizational level environment. How to actually go about doing that is really specific, though, to your people and your behaviors and what's happened over time. And I think we've seen this often on team that in different types of teams, like the star player or the entrenched player or the person who's been around the longest, everyone just accepts it. They're like, oh yeah, they're a turd. That's fine. We're just going to keep going because we all accept it. And that's their job. They might be a star player, a star, you know, whatever, or for whatever reason that here they are, they're on our team and we accept it. We accept their terrible behavior with them. Like, and their terrible behavior is causing this sort of cringy environment or a place where people, it really just fuels a lot of distrust often. I think the most toxic environments, people are so engaged in actively distrusting each other that things are productivity, happiness, sense of fulfillment just drop drastically. So how do we build trust among people? How do we build connection? And I think some people are resistant to that because suddenly their crappy behavior, you know, shines a light on it. And so some of this behavior does need to be addressed, maybe at a behavior level, maybe at a personality level. I think you cannot go wrong with building connection and trying to understand people's needs and behaviors on the individual level, but also you need to rally the people who are on the side of thriving culture. You know, I think there are plenty of people who are just quietly going along, like, I don't want to rock the boat. Great. Yeah. You don't want to rock the boat, but you might be then contributing to this sort of downward decline of culture within your organization or your building. So cool. How do you get those people who don't want to rock the boat to be at least on the team of supporting positive culture too? It's sort of a two-part project.
Yeah, and that's kind of, you have those people that are kind of neutral and making sure that they, you know, what are their goals for the building? Do they want the building to thrive? Because, you know, if there's a negative staff culture in a school, it's just going to go, you spill it over the students as well.
Oh yeah, the students know. They like they know what's going on with the culture. They can see the non-verbal communication of how people walk and hold themselves. And when people are in a really distrustful environment, they are like physically guarded, or they don't share or communicate in the same kind of ways. And that's, these things are noticeable and they're pervasive.
Well, recently in the past couple of years, a lot of workplaces have talked about psychological safety, emotional intelligence. So how can we transfer emotional intelligence to the workplace in a school setting? Especially if a lot of the staff members really don't know what emotional intelligence is. Like if a leader were to do a staff meeting and talk a little bit and have people discover their own traits.
Yes, absolutely. Emotional intelligence is, it's become more and more in the sort of atmosphere these days. Yeah. Basically, there's sort of five parts of emotional intelligence. Part one is self-awareness. So that's knowing yourself, right? That's what self-awareness means. But part of a piece of that that's tricky for people is understanding your emotional state. And if you ask, Brené Brown is a great researcher. She's wrote this book called Atlas of the Heart, where she talks about what different emotional states mean, like how we define these, how her research has informed how these are defined. Because her research showed, if you ask most people how they feel, they'll say happy, sad, or angry, which is three, right? Three options. And we actually have thousands of options to describe how we feel. Are we frustrated? Are we elated? Are we pensive? Are we, you know, thoughtful? Like, there are just many, many ways we feel. So self-awareness, including how, you know, emotional state, but also self-awareness is how we function, how we operate, what fuels us, what drains us. You know, there's lots of pieces of self-awareness. The next part is self-regulation. So how we get ourselves ready to do the things we need to do or not. I think my like time in the trenches of in the education world, like I could not regulate myself in a way that kept me like functioning well doing my job. Like I was just too tired and too worn out for that. But self-regulation also means bringing the parts of yourself that are most relevant and important to any situation. So do I need to be really actively engaged in this and focus, or do I need to be sort of taking a back seat and like be more of a observer in this situation? Do I need to be really excited? Do I need to be bring a lot of calm? I think your educators in the room know when they need to bring the calm because the energy is, you know, up or down, like, or they need to bring up the energy in different ways, but doing that for yourself is self-regulation. The third part is internal motivation, and that's internal motivation that is intrinsically reinforcing. So what I can do that I get benefits from for myself and can motivate internally versus for an external reward before a, you know, or a reward of some sort, whatever it is, more money, more cars, more stars on my like little sheet of paper, whatever it is. So intrinsic motivation, empathy. Part four. So that's cognitive empathy, understanding how other people feel. So if self-regulation, self-awareness is being able to label my own feelings in meaningful ways, empathy is being able to understand and appreciate other people's feelings in meaningful ways. So not just that you're happy, sad, or angry, but wait, how are you really feeling? How am I understanding your feeling? I don't need to feel it with you. It's not that sort of integrated empathy. It's more cognitive. Like, I understand what you're feeling. I understand that this is hard for you. I understand this is easy for you, whatever it is. And then the last part of emotional intelligence is this big bubble called social skills, right? And you're like, great, that's everything in the universe. But that's how we communicate, how we deal with conflict, how we interact, how we react in social situations through like the give and take of human interaction. And people, and all of these different things, self-awareness, self-regulation, internal motivation, empathy, and social skills are things we can learn, we can improve, we can develop our skills around or tactics around. So those are the five pieces of emotional intelligence. And how we work with all of those, once we put all these pieces together, we realize, oh, I'm actually not that great at one part. Or like, oh, yeah, I'm really great at this other part, which is even better. How do we use those to build more connection and build more sense of a team around us and build more sense of we're doing things together? Like, we can accomplish things together. So that's the short story of what emotional intelligence is.
Yeah, you mentioned Atlas of the Heart. Do you have any other readings you would suggest? I know I read Emotional Intelligence 2.0, and I forgot the author's name.
Oh, yeah.
I read that a couple of years ago.
That might have been, was that Daniel Goleman? It might have been. I don't know. Because he sort of did some of the original research on that. He also wrote Primed to Lead, which is about leadership and emotional intelligence together. I think it's called Primed to Lead. Oh, no. If I gave you the wrong title, look up Daniel Goleman. I think he'll... He does a lot of research around that. I'm trying to think of other great books at the time, at the moment. I think Daring Greatly, and again, which is also some Brené Brown, talks a lot about, or Daring to Lead, talks about these sort of this overlap of leadership and emotional intelligence in a way that's very accessible to folks too. Because there's like the clinical research side, which is a little bit like, okay, thanks for that. Now tell me how I use this. Tell me how I'm going to apply this. Like, what does this mean in action? And I think Brené Brown generally is a good author for, cool, how do I put this into action? How do I use this in a way to, move things forward for myself?
Yeah, because she breaks that down, for the people, the masses, I would say. And I think this is more and more important, whether you do it in a small group setting, maybe in your department or grade level team, or in a whole staff discussion, right, in small groups, just have people kind of discuss these five traits of emotional intelligence. And, you know, I think more and more in the past several years, a lot of the social skills, right, people have been lacking in the social skills of, you know, reacting a lot more because they do that a lot on social media. So and I think if you're more aware of your emotional intelligences, then you're able to, you know, react better in situations that might be challenging at work.
Absolutely. And I think you're better able to like bring your like that self-regulation, right? Something crazy just happened, something hard just happened, something really weird just happened. Yeah. How are you going to regulate yourself to bring yourself fully to that in a way that's authentic again? I mean, I guess it ties back to authenticity. And people who are well in tune with their emotional intelligence are people we view as authentic and we can connect with. And they are people that we trust more because we know what's going on with them. It's not like you need to be an open book and just blabber everything out there to the universe, but they are grounded in themselves in a way that is easy for other people to connect with and understand and trust.
So I also wanted to see if people are aware of their emotional intelligence. Besides that, what else would they need to do their best at work? If, you know, maybe they're coming out of a difficult situation, changing positions, and they want to strive to make this, you know, the best school year ever, or, you know, start off on the right foot in a new position.
I think there's a lot to be said for taking your cues from the introverts around you. I think there's like Susan Cain, here's your other book recommendation, Quiet by Susan Cain, which is a great book about the subtitle is The Power of Introverts in a World That Just Can't Stop Talking. But she talks about this sort of introvert style approach to leadership and to learning and growth, which involves like taking things in first before you like put things out there to make change or make effects. And I think this is sort of the classic leadership advice from there. It's like to maybe not show up on the first day like a bull in a china shop and just tear it all down. Yeah. Like that's maybe not good. Maybe that's your actual job. Maybe that's what you're there for, to tear down an old culture and rebuild one, tear down something and rebuild it. Cool. That's great if that's your job, but that's probably not optimal for day one when you really need to build trust and build connection. Mm-hmm. And I think the my background is in experiential education, clearly. So you have to build an environment that is psychologically safe. You mentioned that before. Where people can bring forward ideas and bring forward their authenticity. And once you're connecting at this very human level, so many things are possible that are not possible when you connect. That type of leadership is not super effective at building a team that functions well together. And a team that functions well and thrives is one where everyone is motivated, but also everyone everyone raises up at the same time versus I'm just going to do what someone says and keep my head down and, you know, try to avoid getting too much attention.
Yeah. And that's like, I think you said like listening, I think that's the most important thing as a new leader, or if you're just joining a team as a staff member, you know, if you have ideas, just keep those to yourself for a little while. Right.
Just learn what's going on there. I train new staff for so long and I'm like, it's great that you're new here. And I don't want to hear how you can fix things until like we had staff for many years. Like, cool. I want your ideas and your suggestions, but I want them in your second year once you've actually seen how things function here. And you might have great ideas. I mean, don't tell me no ideas, right, in year one. But the first year, I want you to actually learn what's happening and why we're doing things the way we are. Because I can't explain every system to you, but like, oh yeah, this needs to happen for this reason. But when you show up day one, it might seem silly or it might seem to take longer than it needs to, whatever it is. So take some time to learn what's going on in the systems and learn the relationships among the people around you. You can't go wrong there.
Yeah, that's perfect advice. Well, we talk about a lot of things just about workplace relationships and emotional intelligence, working with people who are difficult. Out of everything we discussed today on the podcast, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
That you have power of influence in the world around you, whether you have a leadership title or an official role as a leader or not. And so to use your influence well.
That's great advice. Where can people connect with you and find you online?
I am at wslleadership.com. And one thing I specifically want to mention is I have an emotionally intelligent conflict management checklist, which I mentioned actually a few parts of during our conversation. That's at wslleadership.com/conflict. And so folks can get that if they're interested.
Great, great. I will link that in the show notes along with your social media links. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast and lending us a little bit of your insight about leadership and skills that people should have in the workplace.
It's been awesome being here. Thanks for having me.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.